Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of The Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we talk about some teams that continue to stack wins. The Spurs doing pretty well without Victor Wembanyama. Should be better when he's back. The New York Knicks winning without OG Anunoby. They should be better when he's back. We check in on the Boston Celtics. What is this group? The Memphis Grizzlies. Hey, they're playing defense again, and Zach Edey has MVP level on-off splits. What on earth is happening there? We get into some player shout-outs. I also may or may not rant about how upset I've been by this Los Angeles Clippers season. But nonetheless, we got a lot of hoop. We hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, hello, sir. How are you?
Feeling good. Feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Ready to talk about some basketball, man.
All right. Well, let's have some fun. Let's roam the baseline. Let's talk about some teams that have caught our eyes, that have impressed us as of late. And I would like to start the bidding with a team that we haven't talked about in a little bit, Steve, but they keep churning out wins. The San Antonio Spurs.
Okay.
As of recording, 13-6, fifth in the Western Conference, though I think they're like a game out of a top three seed, very much bunched up after OKC, who is just in a tier of their own right now. But as of recording, per Clean in the Glass, eighth in offense, 13th in defense, 10th in net rating, but without Victor Wembanyama, they are 5-2. A win over the Kings, a win over the Grizzlies. We have some Grizzlies thoughts coming a little bit later. Quick teaser there. Win over the Hawks, the Blazers, and the Nuggets. Nice come from behind victory against the Denver Nuggets for cup action there. Losses to the Suns and the Wolves. And I tell you what, Steve, the offense has been a lot of fun to watch. I think the overall experience of the San Antonio team trying to find itself without Victor Wembanyama and everything that he's meant to them on both ends of the floor has been a fun adventure. But watching De'Aaron Fox take control of this offense and take control in a way that doesn't mean like this is heliocentric, he controls literally everything, but just watching him kind of find himself offensively, this is something that we both talked about with the general excitement level of De'Aaron Fox. Wasn't an A-plus season for him last year. It was cut short once he got to San Antonio after a few games. But we both expressed some optimism in the offseason when we were doing our previews. Like, hey, if he's healthy, he actually gets more time with Wemby. Got to put a pause on that part as well. But we should see a return to form from De'Aaron Fox. He has a healthy hand. He is just good at basketball. And so since Victor Wembanyama's been out, it's 26 points per game. It's 7 assists, 55% on twos, 39% on threes with real volume for De'Aaron Fox. And his command in ball screens continues to stand out for me. One of the things that I always track with De'Aaron Fox is he is one of the fastest players that we have in the league. He can get downhill whenever he wants to. What exactly is the blend of drives versus pull-up twos versus pull-up threes? It's felt like he's found the right balance of those three things. And once you add in the playmaking on top of that, and I honestly want to pause right there because some of the passes that De'Aaron Fox has put on film is not necessarily new, but the volume of this and within the context of no Victor Wembanyama, who's going to step up and try to fill those shoes, it's felt loud in this case. Like watching the Denver game and Jokic is at the level, putting two on the ball briefly, he's mixing in, okay, sometimes we're going to string this out and we're going to make the simple pass, we're going to keep things going. Sometimes we're just going to beat you and turn the corner anyway. Sometimes as I feel you creeping up to the level of the screen, here's a bounce pass that I have no business being able to get off. Or I can drive this a little bit and I can still get a wraparound bounce pass off and we can create good looks there. And so just watching him there and then even zooming out from the Fox experience of it all, what I've enjoyed about the San Antonio offense as a whole is the way that they paired their off-ball screens to kind of set up some of these pick and rolls. I think that's been very good for Devin Vassell in particular, who is back to knocking down shots. But there's always going to be something. Early guard screen to get De'Aaron Fox a favorable matchup before flowing into a ball screen. We're going to flow out of horns and have Devin Vassell or another guard coming off of a flare before flowing into something. We're going to have a wide pin down that sets up a catch. That's more so with the Vassell bag. It's just been a lot of pre-motion to kind of get the defense moving before flowing into something. And De'Aaron Fox has done a really good job of taking advantage. Vassell's taking advantage. And they've just been able to flow out of that. That's obviously been the stronger side of the ball since Wemby's been out. I have some more thoughts there, but just wanted to give some quick props to the Spurs for holding down the fort right now without Victor Wembanyama.
Well, number one, I'm glad we are finally acknowledging and respecting De'Aaron Fox. I'm glad that happened because remember when he came back and he had to remind people that he's good at basketball? He's good at basketball. To the offense point, I think it ties into how important the stretch is for San Antonio overall. They are winning games. And in the Western Conference, that's extremely important. Because if you look at it, they have the same amount of losses as the Denver Nuggets. They were one loss back behind the Lakers and the Rockets in the loss column. And they get Wembanyama back. So this is a really good job of just holding tight, holding strong, keeping your spot in the standings and giving your chance to potentially rise again. So that's a really important stretch. To the offense point, I think it gives them a base, which is good for when Wemby comes back and also good when Wemby's out of the lineup. And so you can become stronger there. You have more to run. They haven't had Castle either. Just got Dylan Harper back. Yep. So I think being able to have that kind of movement on top of just the sandbox element that Victor Wembanyama brings, where you can pretty much put him in a whole bunch of different scenarios on the court. We can get what we want. That gets you that blend. It's also important to kind of get De'Aaron Fox into rhythm. So I like the point that you brought up. Hey, it's De'Aaron Fox being De'Aaron Fox. But you got to remember, he came from Sacramento. He's used to being involved in movement. He used to, you know, kind of mixing in a pick and roll or an attack or attacking in transition. So he gets a better feel for the overall team. You get Wembanyama back, you put yourself in a strong position. The interesting point, though, I say all that to say this. They are 8-6 in the Western Conference. They have lost to Phoenix twice. They have lost to Minnesota. They lost to Golden State twice. They lost to the Lakers. So at some point, you do have to get some of those back. So it's a give and take to a degree. Not the end of the world. This is, I mean, for San Antonio to be at this spot with Wemby out for seven games is phenomenal. But now we got to see, you know, you still have to continue the process of learning how to win, learning how to navigate these. And that's kind of the fun part for a young developing team.
Yeah, I will say, just quickly on that point, like, they do have a matchup with the Los Angeles Lakers in the NBA quarterfinals coming next week. So they have an opportunity to stack some wins on that front. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And a very dull thing to say, but like, I don't think they are going to be the best version of themselves until Victor Wembanyama comes back. So important for them to stack wins, to your point, and they can get some wins against the Western Conference while he's out. It should be easier to do so once he does make his return and really help solidify the defense, which... that part's been interesting to me. I think just on a very basic level, so without Wemby, they're sixth in offense, they're 17th in defense, which is fine, but certainly not the high level they were at with Wemby on the floor. And you miss that kind of size and that kind of rim to turn, it's like, duh, the defense is going to be worse. But like, kind of similar to your offense point, establishing a base, like seeing what they want to be and what they want to tap into without Wemby has been kind of fun for me. It's very much, we'll switch a bunch, 1 through 4, we can help it. If there's a non-shooter on the floor, we just do not care about you whatsoever. And like watching them try to tap into some of the, like the cross-matching bag, like going back to the Wolves game, Kelly Olynyk checks in, hey, you have Terrence Shannon Jr. We're just like, wait a minute, why does he, what is this? It's like, no, make the young guy do some things. We're going to try to keep Kelly Olynyk near the basket. We're going to make sure that we have a presence at the rim so you can't get there. And what has remained consistent with Wemby and without Wemby, teams do not take a lot of shots against the San Antonio Spurs at the rim. Now, that does bleed itself to other places. On the good end, they give up a lot of mid-range shots. Just statistically speaking, don't want to be too boring, but like, you want to give up a lot of middies. You don't want to give up rim shots. You don't want to give up threes.
Respect mid-range jump shots.
Oh, they are certainly doing that, Steve. Hey, here you go. Take these shots if you don't mind. And it kind of middle of the pack in terms of opponent three-point rate. So, like, foundationally, that remains strong. But, like, watching some of their pretty consistent nail help team, for example, De'Aaron Fox is very jumpy in that area. If he's at the wing or something, like, yeah, I am here. I trust my speed to get out of there. You've seen a lot of deflections and steals from De'Aaron Fox in that spot. Then Vassell does the same thing, which quickly on the Vassell point, it's been such an up and down season for him, particularly defensively. So it's been kind of funny during the stretch. Like, hey, we actually need you to be more of a stopper for us. Like, we know you're not really equipped to handle a bunch of number ones, but please take on Anthony Edwards and a little bit of Devin Booker and some Jamal Murray. And it's like, okay, some of these reps are good. Other times the screen navigation gets a little funky and it's not Wemby back there. So you got to watch those. But they help. They help early. They really try their best to wall off the rim. They tap into some fun cross-matching things. It hasn't been like a heavy zone stretch for them so far, but Vince Johnson will sprinkle that in after a timeout and stuff. Saw that in the Minnesota game as well. So, like, watching them kind of build out that foundation is interesting. And if they can get that to a level, like, again, 17 is not elite, but, like, that's fine. If that is what you are without Wemby, Now you bring him back and you're just going to be a top five unit because he is a walking top five defense in and of itself. That gives you a stronger foundation and a stronger base. So I think, you know, opponent strength notwithstanding, this is important for them to figure out how they want to navigate that.
No, I think it's a key stretch. I think the defense has been something they've wanted to do all season long. So the activity is going to be very important. And they're going to need that as they face tougher competition and teams try and game plan against them, especially when Wemby comes back. I mean, there's going to be a whole other element of we're trying to take things away. We're going to try and bog you down with switching. We're trying to attack you on the other end. So I've enjoyed Devin Vassell working to kind of pressure the ball and navigate screens. And, oh, that's not Wemby. I need to work to get back in front. And I think the key for San Antonio during this stretch is just staying out of rotation as much as possible, being as clean as you can, be as solid as you can on that first level of screen, especially if it's a guard or a guard wing screen. Let's get a clean switch. Let's not have to scramble and rotate. Let's let Luke Kornet be in a drop and let him contest. Let's pick our poison. This is what you get. So I think for San Antonio, establishing habits on both ends of the floor is key for them during this stretch. You get Wemby Yama back, you try and get back off to the races.
Yeah, I like it. Like the Kornet of it all, just going back to your offensive point earlier, trying to of establish it all. That.
Bingo card! Ha!
You. Anyway, I've enjoyed some of the elbow touches from Luke Kornet. It just helps to maintain that kind of flow in the half court if the initial action doesn't work. He's obviously been a very good screener. Late in drives, always getting those seals in, so he's creating more room for those to be successful. So Luke Kornet continues to do Luke Kornet things. Olynyk still trying to find himself within this offense, I feel. Just how much playmaking is he going to do? How much of the elbow stuff is he going to do? The shooting, that blend is coming together. I guess a quick question now toss to you, Steve. How have you felt about the Jeremy Sochan experience so far this year?
Fine. I think it's the context of the team has changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. So he is someone who can help. They have other pieces as well. So it's kind of melding the minds a little bit to me. I haven't really felt bad about it. It's just, okay, some nights it's going to be this, some nights it's going to be 12 minutes. And we need you to be impactful during that time.
Yeah, definitely. Like it's, for me, still trying to navigate the offense of it all. Like obviously we are well removed from like the point Sochan experience at this point of the program. But he's on the floor. Teams don't mind helping off. Teams don't mind sprinkling in centers on him. But then you go to the Minnesota game, it's like, oh, okay. Well, part of the reason why we can do Kelly Olynyk on Terrence Shannon Jr. is because we can trust Jeremy Sochan to defend Julius Randle in this lineup. So, like, he can take those on. So I'm curious to see how they build out the boat there. Quick hat tips to Keldon Johnson, who continues to have a strong year and continues to impress me like once or twice a game with a defensive play that I am not used to him making on a consistent basis. So I want to give him the shout out. Julian Champagne, continue to knock down threes, brother. We need those. But we'll leave it there. Just wanted to give the hat tip to the San Antonio Spurs. Welcome back, Dylan Harper.
Well, I think it's fair. And I think San Antonio looks at this and they say, we get Dylan Harper going again. We get Keldon and Vassell a bit more comfortable offensively. Fox are doing Fox things. And we, again, positioning is so important in the Western Conference. You get off to a hot start early, you can sustain. This is a tough conference, though. You have a bad 2 or 3 days and you're looking up at the 7th seed. In the play-in.
Yeah. It's tough out there. But okay, those are my Spurs thoughts. Steve, who's the team that's caught your eye as of late?
Well, before I get to my team, real quick, hey, Denver, better get that defense together. Or else, just saying. My team, now guys, it's time to talk about the New York Knicks.
Gasp. We never talk about the New York Knicks.
It's time to talk about the New York Knicks. Hey, are they going to have a top 10 offense this year? They are third in offensive rating, according to NBA.com. 12th in defensive rating. In the month of November, they were second in offensive rating, 10th in defensive rating. And mm-hmm. So you're seeing the building blocks of what the Knicks can become. I think it's been a real patient effort from Coach Mike Brown as far as establishing, I want to play with more pace, as everyone likes to say, but I want to play with more tempo in the half court. I want to get into my actions quicker. I want you guys to go side to side. I want to empower and get Jalen Brunson off ball. Let's get Bridges on ball. Let's get McBride on ball. Let's get everyone involved and try to push this to somewhere where we can have a base no matter who's in the lineup. They have won 11 of their last 14 games, the Cavs. So while the Pistons have been doing what the Pistons have done, the Knicks just been really quietly sneaking and lurking, about to knock on the door pretty quickly. Now, the Knicks did have 2 losses to Orlando during that stretch and 1 loss to Miami. Mm-hmm. But they're 10-1 in Madison Square Garden this year, which seems important going down the line if you can get home court advantage. And they are winners of 4 straight as of recording. Now, I bring up that 4 straight because the starting lineup of Jalen Brunson, Deuce McBride, Mikal Bridges, Josh Hart, and Cat, 4-0 so far. And I have liked the move for a couple reasons. One, I do think it's easier to manage Mitchell Robinson's minutes off the bench. If he's going to be slotted to be 17, 18, let's bring him off the bench. Let's tie him in with Yabu Sele. Let's give our bench a different look. Let's try and help our bench have a little bit more defense. Let's get the rebounding advantage and get second units. Let's kind of keep that there. And on the other side, would you look at it? Josh Hart sure is doing some stuff again, huh, Nikias?
Sure is.
He sure is putting together a little bit of a season. So in the four games as a starter, Josh Hart averaging 17 points, 11.8 rebounds, 7 assists, shooting 53% from the field and 45% from three on 5 attempts a night.
Seems good.
And he is really an important factor for the Knicks. I've liked the job they've done to not only play him, but also get him more involved offensively. The scoring is fine and nice, but I think his initiation, bringing the ball up the court, grabbing and going a rebound, just getting them into things can be good for the Knicks, especially as teams want to deny Jalen Brunson in the backcourt, make him work harder. You can use him kind of like a mini hub, just a connector on offense. You know, you get a swing, you can go to a dribble handoff, you can go to pick and roll. His passing has been good. His drives, you know, random play for the Knicks, I think is good. And this isn't just a Knicks thing, but we've seen it in Atlanta with like Dyson Daniels. We've seen it in Cleveland with Jalen Tyson. Some of these non-shooters to a degree, when they are able to drive and you either ball watching or you overhelp, you see the impact of what those kicks are, who they're kicking the ball to, and what that opens up for them. So him being able to get them in driving kick has been fun. And then, of course, you put a big on him, and now he can be a screener. He can make short roll decisions, and that just puts a lot of pressure on you. So the more that Josh Hart plays and the better that he is offensively, we know the impact he can have defensively for this team. And that's kind of where I think the tie-in is, because everyone loves a double big lineup these days, but you are asking Mitchell Robinson and Karl Anthony Towns to, at some point, do perimeter-based things.
Yes.
And we've seen teams poke at that. Okay, it's fine. You could switch. You can contain the drive. Are you ready to make a multiple effort? Are you going to be in position on the weak side to help and recover and close back out and keep the ball in front? Are you going to be able to navigate a screen? How are you going to handle those possessions? We've seen teams poke at that. Josh Hart didn't necessarily have that problem. So I want to give a tip of the cap to Josh Hart. Have you enjoyed the Josh Hart experience, Nikias?
I have enjoyed the Josh Hart experience. And like before getting into the Josh Hart experience, I would just like to say, to one of the earlier points that you made, it was a whole overall point about the starting lineup. Thank goodness we are just getting more of Jalen Brunson and Deuce McBride together. That felt like such low-hanging fruit with last year's team, to play them together, get some more shooting, get an extra ball handler on the floor. If you want to dabble in any of the full court pressure things, Deuce McBride can do that. We've seen it during this stretch as well. I'm glad we're getting more of that. Like, it's been pretty clear for multiple seasons at this point that those two can play together and you will win your minutes when those two are on the court together. So leaning more into that has just been fun for me. So I wanted to sprinkle that in. As for Josh Hart, I've enjoyed it for all the reasons that you listed. The initiation, some of the playmaking, he's knocking down timely threes, the random crashes and the extra possessions that he can create for you, and defensively, what he's opening up that you already kind of hit on, just some of the player types that he can take on, which allows for some more roaming elsewhere. Hey, we can put you on number one sometimes, so now we can unleash Mikal Bridges more as a helper, which I don't know. I know you're going to get to Mikal Bridges soon, but like, oh my goodness. Talk about somebody I'm having fun watching play basketball as of late. It's Mikal Bridges. But no, Josh Hart has helped unlock a lot. And if he's locked in defensively, we know he can take on a lot of different on-ball assignments, but off-ball, if he's nailing those early rotations, if he's scramming Jalen Brunson out of matchups or Deuce McBride out of matchups, putting out little fires before they become big fires, it just helps the entire ecosystem of that Knicks defense, which is trending up, as you mentioned, the November numbers already. And if they get stops, you get in transition. And that's where Jalen Brunson's at his best. Deuce McBride, early pull-ups, he's at his best. Mikal Bridges has long been one of the best transition scorers in basketball. You get the early trail stuff with Cat if you want to. So it all kind of ties in together, and I'm with you. Josh Hart absolutely deserves credit for helping tie this group together.
Yeah, want to give him a salute. I feel like I can't talk about the Knicks without giving a tip of the cap to Jalen Brunson, who's been insane over this stretch. I believe, what was he, Eastern Conference Player of the Week? He's just been getting bucket after bucket after bucket, and the way they use him, some of the two-man game with Cat, inverting actions, getting him off ball, he's sudden in the sense that he's going to get the ball. You don't necessarily know when he's going to get the ball, and he's going to have space to attack, because we know the Knicks do a good job of trying to clear space, trying to clear a wing, cutting from the wing to make sure he can attack. And it's just, his footwork, the shiftiness, like, these are things that we all know, but he does it every single night. And I feel like he's got to get that kind of credit for being that type of player on a nightly basis where you have to deal with him. You have to try and stop him. And that combination of driving and scoring is just too tough to deal with. So salute to Jalen Brunson. But I'm glad you mentioned Mikal Bridges, right?
Yes.
So we'll get to the defense. I know you're excited about that. But he's shooting 52.7% from the field. He's shooting 41.6% from three. To the defensive part, he's got a career high 2.1 steals a game, career high 1.3 blocks a game, seven games with at least two blocks and two steals, which leads the league. And I think the big thing for me has been his off-ball defense this year. The activity that he's shown when he's not defending someone one-on-one. That the Knicks defense this year, when they're active and pressuring the ball, it's one thing. When they are rotating behind that and you see their jerseys moving, when there is an action or a roller and there's help, Bridges has been a real big key of that. And so when you have him and Hart and OG eventually coming back, that's kind of the defensive base you can imagine that you can sustain. So I want to give a tip of the defense. I know you will as well. But before you do, he's fourth in the NBA in total corner threes made. He's made 22, shooting 50% in the corner. He's shooting 43.5% on catch and shoot threes this year on 4.8 attempts. Last year, that was 37.2. He's shooting 50.9% on pull-up twos. He's taking one less this year. He's kind of finding that blend offensively within this system of being empowered, knowing when to attack, being able to drive closeouts, being able to go get you a bucket, and just blending in. So I think his play is also helping to elevate the Knicks. The floor is yours, Nikais.
I've been waiting. No, I'm just sorry. Just kidding. We're not going to do a 15-minute breakdown of Mikal Bridges, though we could. I would just like to say, he feels like he's on track for an all-defensive first-team selection at this rate. The on-ball work has been very good. You have the traditional, I guard the opposing team's best perimeter player. I have to navigate a bunch of screens on the ball. I have to navigate a bunch of screens off the ball. Please watch the Toronto tape. All the mazes that he had to go through to defend Brandon Ingram and the job that he did. So you have that stuff, but to the off-ball defense in particular, you know, I affectionately just yell out limbs whenever he does anything on a basketball court during our watch parties. But you really do just kind of feel him when he's at the nail. But when he's anywhere near a primary action or if a drive is happening, he doesn't have to completely leave his man to impact the ball elsewhere. And like on the higher level, we talk about that with Wimby because of his arms and his length, that he can just kind of wall off a quarter of the court, if not half of it. His press can do that. But Mikal Bridges has seeds of that because his arms are so long and because he's as flexible as he is as a basketball player, underrated portion of his game. He doesn't have to do the full commit. And then trust the closeout. He's really good at that too when he's locked in. But he doesn't have to do that. He can play in between two better than most wing defenders. And this is where you get the steals that pop out on film, some of the pick sixes that pop out on film, the deflections that somebody else might pick up and that goes the other way. But even if it isn't any of that, there are so many possessions for the New York Knicks as of late to where the thought of Mikal digging at a drive forces an earlier pickup. And that allows someone else to get back to theirs. And now you got to create an advantage all over again. And like those, the typical, it doesn't show up on the stat sheet, but like those things kind of stack up for positive impact for me. And so the fact that we are seeing more of Romer Mikal Bridges with some of the cross matching that Nick York does, in addition to the on ball juice being back, that just breeds impact already. And then you get to the other end, as you mentioned, the shot profile, the more empowerment, the drives are up, the three-point shooting is there, the mid-range shot is still there when you need it to be, the screening that he can sprinkle in early in the clock or even later in possessions to force switches, feed matchups to someone else. It's been such a fun stretch of basketball for Mikal Bridges. This is the Mikal Bridges that the Knicks were promised when they first got him. And it's been cool watching him tap into that. And it breeds more excitement for me. It's like whenever OG comes back, like that takes a little bit off his plate in theory. And so you may see a better version of him defensively and or offensively because he doesn't have to do as much as what he's doing right now. So like I'm glad you brought up Mikal. I was excited to talk about Mikal.
Yeah,
he's been very good.
I figured you would be. And I think one important part as they wait for OG to come back, you just have a lot of guys going at the same time. You feel a little more confident in your lineups. Guys know what they're supposed to do. Tyler Kolek comes in, does the job, gets back to the bench. Yeah. He goes in and tries to make some plays. Deuce McBride has been shooting the leather off the ball of late here. Nekias finally having the breakout that I thought he was going to have at the start until Landry Shamet just decided I'm never missing again. Deuce McBride, as of recording, shooting 60% from three in his last four games, 15 to 25. So
seems good.
And his pressure defensively just kind of fits right in, as you mentioned earlier. The interesting part, once again, is the Karl Anthony Towns portion. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a fluid dynamic deal. The production is there. Can you find it consistently? What's changed? And so the shooting, I think most people would say that should normalize at some point. Yep. It's not going to be this. But it is interesting because last year he shot 42% on a brother the big threes. This year he's at 31.3%. And then the drives are just about the same. And we've seen Mike Brown try and get him touches at the elbow. We've seen them try and get him a post up, try and establish him, you know, obviously using him as a, you know, a hub at the elbow to get cutting around him. But on those drives, it doesn't feel like he's getting as many calls as he would like. And the finishing feels like it has dipped to a degree that may not be sustainable. So I think he's at 66.9% in the restricted area last year. He's at 58.8% this year. And in the paint, non-restricted area, the short jump shot, 45.2% last year. He's at 37.2% this year. So we have a combination where, okay, the shots that people like you, aren't falling. What do we do now? And so I think it will be fine eventually. I think there's enough there. I do get curious against those teams that try to be physical, try to be active, try and get their tempo down. Okay, how do you balance getting Cat the ball without slowing yourself down to an absurd degree? That's something to keep an eye on. My thing with Cat is really more the defense.
Yeah.
I think you can figure out the Karl Anthony Towns offense portion. For the Knicks, playoff-wise, defensively, you got to figure out what do you want to do with Cat? What are your best lineups? Are you going to do just drop? Is it going to be some switching, mixing in? We've seen that. How are you going to handle him and Jalen Brunson together? Like, you still have some of those playoff level questions, but as far as the base goes, I feel really good about what the Knicks have put together.
Okay. Yeah, I think the Cat, I'm in a similar boat as you, where I think the offense is just going to be fine eventually. Like, I feel the conversation that we had after the first week and a half of the season, where it's like, hey, where are the Cat elbow touches? This is weird. Like, that's kind of gone away. They've mixed in more of those without losing the overall ethos of the ball movement and overall empowerment. So, like, I think that's going to be fine. He is one of the best big man shooters we have ever seen. Like, I just think that is just going to be fine. The defense is also where I'm just kind of like, I almost don't want to talk about it because I feel like everyone's talked about Cat defense at some point. And so on one hand, it's like, okay, what exactly am I adding to this? But I will just say to the Cat portion, I am intrigued by, we're going to have you maybe not all the way at the level, but like a step below. And then we can turn this into a late switch if necessary. And like, he has had his moments where he's held up pretty well on some of those late switches. And so like, that is in there. And if you can sprinkle in enough of that, then you're going to be fine. The biggest thing for me is just like, I just want consistent communication with those kind of things, because what pops on film for me are the instances where Cat is kind of up near the level, there's a couple of dribbles, and now it's decision time. Has Mikhail gotten back? Has Josh Hart gotten back? Has Deuce gotten back, etc.? If they have, Cat can release, get back to his, we're cool. There are too many instances for me where it's the two dribbles or the two beats, it's time for you to get out. Cat hangs for the third. And now the other person doesn't know what's going on. Okay, Cat's still here. I guess he's switching. Let me get out. And Cat's like, bet, my guy's back. I'm getting out. Like, that happened early in the Toronto game. And you can see both Mikal Bridges and Cat kind of, they don't want to do the demonstrative what's going on here, but it's like a low little, who's got, and it's just like, I don't want too many of those. And like, the other thing that I've kind of been stewing on just with the Cat experience altogether, the aesthetic of his mistakes make his mistakes feel worse than what they actually are.
Oh, you're calling out volume right now. Okay.
Like, it's a little, like, I don't think the criticisms themselves are unfair. I'll just say, like, I'll go back to the Toronto game. I think mid first quarter, it was an early pick and roll. I want to say it was Brandon Ingram and Mamu when he first checked in. Early pick and roll near the middle of the floor. They had, I think, Jacoby Walters, one of the perimeter players on the right wing, right corner was empty. Cat comes up to the level. On time pocket pass is a Mamu dunk. And it's like, okay. In the midst of that pocket pass, Cat does what many bigs do. Jokic is supreme at this. I don't think I can get here. let me toss my leg out and see if I can get a kickball. We hit the ball, whistle blows, we get to set our half-court defense up. You know, we just try it again. Mm-hmm. But because of the way Cat generally defends, like his arms are by his side more often than you'd like. It's not always an active stance, poking at the ball or that kind of thing. So it's like arms are down. He's like sliding, has like the half lunge going because he's doing the at the level thing. He commits a little bit too much. The pocket pass is there. He tries to kick. The leg doesn't really go up. It just looks bad. And like the mistake itself is very easy to point out, like why it happened. It's not really a big deal. You don't want that, but it's really good design because of how Toronto spaced around it. But because of Cat, it just looks like, oh my God, this dude ain't even trying out here. What is it? And like, I don't think that part's fair to him. I don't think it's always an effort deal. I think it's more of a communication deal. And like him needing to know when is my time to release versus to take a matchup. And when can I vocalize that? And so like more consistency there, I think they're going to be fine. If for no other reason than because they have Mikael and Josh and eventually OG and Deuce. And like they have so many good defenders they can toss around him. Even if it's just that, they should be fine. I just want more communication.
Well, I think to add to your point, the thing for Cat is just being able to nail his job. He's just got to do his job. And if you're Coach Mike Brown, you're the Knicks coaching staff, it's figuring out how many jobs could he possibly do and how much versatility or flexibility do we have? And so can we kind of mix in where he's kind of playing cat and mouse? Get it? Uh-huh. Where he's near the level of the screen. He's dropping back. You might trap. You never know what it's going to be. Can he get some of that? The late switches helps him out when those drops aren't necessarily as active and we can, okay, I got the ball. I can contain it. It's a good opportunity, especially with Josh Hart in the starting lineup, for him to kind of nail some of the five things more as opposed to the hybrid of, okay, I'm switching. Now I'm on the perimeter. I'm helping. Now I'm back at the five. It should be a little bit easier to nail that. So intrigued there.
Yeah, I like it. Other possession I'll point out, literal first defensive possession of the game against Toronto. They flow into Spain pick and roll with Brandon Ingram. And New York switches towards the top. Deuce McBride ends up on Scottie Barnes. And I'm expecting Cat to just scram Deuce out of the matchup because Cat's in the corner with James in battle. But Cat is just kind of staring at the action in front of him. And so that switch cut doesn't happen. It's a kick to James in battle in the corner behind him, misses the three. And now it's an offensive rebound from Jacoby Walter over Jalen Brunson. And it probably would have been a defensive rebound for Cat if he had like taken the matchup to begin, wouldn't been close to the paint. But it's just little stuff. Like I think just more consistency is what I would like. That's all.
So did you enjoy watching that game back? Because it sounds like it had you in a little bit of a headache, bud.
I did overall because they ended up doing the job. I'm just saying, like, those are examples of these are low-hanging fruit things to grab for the Cat defense experience. And it just boils into the overall communication thing. So, like, that, I just wanted to hammer that point home.
Understood.
And I don't think it's been, like, all bad, to be clear.
Got you. Understood. Do you have any other Knicks thoughts?
I think you mentioned Yabu Selle a little bit earlier. Like, I did not expect this to be the shot-making season that he would have in New York, derogatory. And so just a continual perking up of that would be cool. Because the defense and some of the lineup versatility that he can unlock is still there. Just want a little bit more. I gave the quick shot to Tyler Kolek. He is fighting defensively and, like, the playmaking is there. I would have liked to have seen more of him last year, too. But neither here nor there. And I mentioned the Jalen Brunson passing last week, so I don't want to hammer that one home. So, yeah, shout out to the Knicks. There you go. They got the Raptors next week in the NBA Cup quarterfinals as well. So we'll be keeping eyes on that. Smile emoji.
Well, now you got to throw us a break. You threw me off.
Well, I threw Steve off. I will indeed throw us the break. We'll be back after this break. We're going to post up and talk about some teams that make us think. And we are back, and it is now time for us to post up. We're talking about some teams that make us think, some teams that make us go, positively or derogatory. Steve, who are some teams that you are thinking about right now?
I am thinking about the Boston Celtics, and I've been thinking about the Boston Celtics for a while now. What is this team? Who is this team? We're around, the 20-game mark? It feels like a good time to check in on what they are. They've never lost more than three games in a row this year. Mm-hmm. They have yet to win more than three games in a row this year. And so I have a deep respect for Coach Joe Mazzulla. And I think if you listen to him pregame, postgame, after practice, media availability, you get an idea of what he wants this team to be, the process he wants them to undertake, and you see the buy-in from the players. Mm-hmm. This is a team that competes. This is a team that gets after it. This is a team that can score. They can defend. They also can get scored on, and they can get deep in the clock, and they can get stuck in the mud. And you never really know which one it's going to be. They've beaten Cleveland twice. They've beaten Orlando twice. They just ended Detroit's streak. Mm-hmm. They have lost to the Brooklyn Nets at home. They have lost to the Utah Jazz at home. Now, guys, do you know how many road wins the Utah Jazz have this year?
Was it two?
One. Just that one.
At the Ange Bowl.
At the same token, they're fourth in offensive rating. 17th in defensive rating, which is a little bit of flip from last year, but they are up there. And I've been trying to figure out, what is the mindset? How does this team function? How do they operate? They lead the league in the fewest turnovers per game a night. 11.8. Don't turn the ball over. We're not going to beat ourselves. We're going to take care of the ball. We are going to get shots up. If we make them, who knows? They're tied with the Knicks for fourth in the league in three-pointers made a night, about 15. Seventh in the league in offensive rebounds per game, 13. Fifth in second chance points at 17.7. And so I'm like, okay, we can generate these threes. We can occasionally get some buckets. We may move the ball. We're not going to turn it over. What are the easy baskets that they get? I know I'm going basic box scorey, so sorry for you Vorpers out there. They're 23rd in the NBA in fast break points. They're 28th in the NBA in points in the paint. And they're 23rd in the NBA in drives per game. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Are we getting paint touches? How are we generating these looks that we're getting? Are we opening things up? Do we get anything easy? I'm not sure. But on the flip side, because they don't turn the ball over, guess who's not scoring off turnovers? Their opponents. First in the league. Hey, you want an easy basket? We're sixth in opponent fast break points, and we're second in opponent points in the paint. Are you a good basketball player? Are you considered superstar level? Would you like to drive in the paint? Guess what you're about to see? A Boston Celtic jersey in front of you helping with another one behind it. And you're going to have to kick, and we're going to figure it out after that. They are showing bodies. If you are of a certain level, they're going to be active. At the end of the day, you get what you get with the Celtics, and they are who they are. So I thought on a quick rabbit hole this morning, the guys.
Oh, okay.
Celtics average 91.8 field goal attempts a night. The combination of Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, and Anfernee Simons account for 66.9% of those field goal attempts. Even funnier is the fact that Jaylen Brown is shooting 54% on twos, Peyton Pritchard shooting 61% on twos, and Anfernee Simons shooting 50% on twos and 40% on threes. What is this team? A bunch of bucket getters who, I don't get it, but I get it. It's Jaylen Brown, it's Derek White, it's Peyton Pritchard, it's Demetrius Kata, it's Anfernee Simons, it's now Sam Hauser, now Jordan Walsh, and whoever they need that day. Have you seen, they have 13 guys that are averaging 10 or more minutes. Like, obviously, people go in and out of the rotation, but what?
Yeah.
But they are 4-2 with the starting lineup of Peyton Pritchard, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Jordan Walsh, and Nemus Keita. So I don't know what they are. I know Jaylen Brown's ready. I know he's ready to get a bucket. Mm-hmm. I know he's trying to get after it. Do you want a funny combination, Nikias?
Yes.
So he's got a career-high 4.8 assists. He's got a career-high 6.8 free throw attempts, which if you watch the Celtics, he would like that to be much higher because on any drive,
yes,
he would like to be at the free throw line because he believes he gets hit. Career-high 28.4 points a night. He's 6th in the NBA in drives per game. That's not the fun part. Leads the NBA in mid-range jump shots made. Shoot 51%. He's done made 60 of them. He gets to a spot, and it's going up. And I just feel like he's embraced the role. Now, how much Jaylen Brown have they needed? Is that the right balance? Would you like less? Would you like more? I'm not sure. But if you have a mismatch, Jaylen Brown's going to find it. Jaylen Brown's going to attack it. I think that helps them. Mm-hmm. When I talked about kind of the bucket getters they have, right? They need those guys because they do get stuck in low clock scenarios from time to time. That ball can get a little sticky. The defenses switch or, hey, there's movement, but we're not guarding any of this. So you can complain about maybe the Anfernee Simons season, but hey, they need him to go get one every now and then. But back to Brown, I've liked the patience that he's shown on some of these drives, especially in pick and roll. I'm going to take the space. I'm going to engage. If I have a shot, I have one. If not, I'm going to keep going, see if I can get to the big, see if I can make a play. And so it's just, I'm trying to figure them out. Does it make any sense?
I love how distraught this Celtics group has made you. And distraught probably isn't the right word.
No, they're fun.
A lot of positive things. Yeah,
they're fun. I just don't know. I don't know what their thing is. And they have a thing. But I don't know what it is.
Their thing is getting buckets and not being able to end possessions. Is the general bit. No, in all seriousness, one, before I actually dig into my Celtics thoughts, the joy that I felt listening to you talk about the Boston Celtics and the amount of shots that they get at the rim. After copious amounts of jokes throughout this podcast, when I would bring up the Boston Celtics rim pressure and rim rate and the Phoenix Suns rim pressure and rim rate, it's warmed the heart to hear Steve look at a Boston team like, hey, man, y'all go get downhill. Y'all can get to the rim for real. I just love that part. Now, as for the actual Boston thoughts that I have, the offense has been uneven, and I think you feel, because teams will show help towards Jaylen Brown and they'll sprinkle in some at the level and stuff, but like you don't get a consistent dose of two on the ball from really anyone on the roster. And I think without that, that's where you get into some of the sputtering if the bucket getter decides, actually, I'm going to look for a pass instead of the shot that I have. And it's like, oh, well, that wasn't really there. Now we got a swing. We are later in the clock than we want to be. The Celtics, I think, 28th in terms of average possession length this year, to your point about being in the mud and taking a lot of shots late in the clock. And it's like, okay, well, that isn't tough. Or that isn't ideal. And so then you get into these late clock scenarios and the ball often finds Jaylen Brown, who, as you mentioned, is having a ridiculous mid-range shooting season. I went down my own rabbit hole this morning.
Oh my.
with the Boston Celtics. So I'm just like, you know, we've talked about it on the podcast. We've talked about it in the watch parties. I think we've both tweeted out clips of Jaylen Brown shot making this year. It's like, yo, he's getting a lot of buckets in the intermediate area and like a lot of disrespectful buckets, honestly. Snatch back, I'm going to stare at you a little bit, and then I'm going to take this pull-up. It's just a lot of that from Jaylen Brown, right? So I was like, okay, he's knocking down a lot of mid-range shots. I know the volume and the makes are going to be up there. I'm sure the efficiency is going to be up there, too. How difficult are these looks? And so I went to, you know, the artist formerly known as Second Spectrum, because they also track, like, expected shot quality, you know, based on where the shot's being taken, who's the defender, contest level, all the stuff. I'm not going to get into that deep into the weeds, right? Jaylen Brown, converting 51% of his mid-range shots. You know what his expected efficiency on these shots are, Steve?
Uncertain.
39%.
Is that good or bad?
That number is not very good. He is outperforming. He's outperforming his mid-range shot quality by over 11 percentage points. Mm. There are only five players overperforming their shot quality by a larger amount on mid-range shots. And they all make sense.
Ooh, Can I guess one? Is one of them Dylan Brooks?
He is not.
Dang. He hooping too well.
He's up there. He is up there, but he's not in the top. He's not in this top five list. Donovan Mitchell.
Makes sense. Taking a lot of tough lot of tough shots.
A lot of windmill gathers into the push shot. So Donovan Mitchell, number one on the list. Luka Doncic, number two on the list.
Yeah, he just takes those like it's water. It's fine.
Yeah, it's just gonna dribble 4 miles per hour. You're on my hip. It's fine. Up fake. Oh, there's a contest. I don't care about it. Here it is. Great footwork, etc. Keontae George. We've talked about his growth inside the arc this year, the drives in particular, but he's gotten a lot of mid-range buckets this year. Way to bounce back in that second game against Houston, because the first one we're not going to talk about, but that's okay. Zach LaVine.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's all.
Makes sense. Also, barely met the minimum threshold. I went minimum of 50 mid-range attempts. He was at 53, I think. So barely made it. But you look at his attempts, the fading jumpers, like it makes sense, right? Number five, Kawhi Leonard.
Mm.
Which also makes...
You know, all these names track. I understand it.
Makes sense. And now the kicker, Steve. Those are the five outperforming their expected quality on those mid-range shots more than Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown has taken more mid-range shots than all of them. He is the only player of that group of six that has taken at least 100.
Yep.
So you get that plus the volume, which into the broader point of this, Boston Celtics, as we are known, as they are known as the, we take all the threes all the time, don't care how you feel about it, national media hysteria about their shot profile, et cetera. The Boston Celtics, eighth in mid-range rate this year in the half court. Nearly 38% of their shots come from mid-range. And I think you can deal with that if Jaylen Brown is the one taking the highest volume of those shots and making them to this degree. If that decreases at all, I wonder what that looks like. And in general, to kind of bounce off your overall point about their flow and what they're trying to get into offensively, if that is better, if they get the ball across quicker, if they flow into actions with more tempo, does that number just kind of drop by default in terms of the overall volume because they are able to puncture the paint a little bit more? Because not like their spacing principles are like bad or new or anything like that.
No, no. I mean, I think it comes down to, one, they have multiple people who can get those shots. Two, there is a volume to this where Jaylen Brown is going to get opportunities. So even if it dips a little bit, how strong does the dip have to be to where you truly feel it? Because they have good concepts. They have good movement. They have good sets. When you watch them, you see what they're trying to do. Problem is they face a team that starts grabbing jerseys, starts denying passes. You get start switching. They're just deeper in the clock. There's nothing open. And so maybe it's their defense elevating just a little bit. Just a little bit. Maybe it's getting some more cutting. Sam Hauser getting into a stronger groove so you can use them in slips. And now you get a rotation and now we can kind of generate some shots that way. Like, it feels like there's a lever they can hit. But how do they get there? And is it, honestly, you know what, Nikias, as I'm thinking, is it just Derek White does stuff? How have you felt about the Derek White season? Oh, my. That's a start.
don't do me like this. I think Derek White has mostly been fine. And I think he is going to be a big part of the Celtics figuring out the defense in particular. Like, we know what he can do on the ball. I think some of the weak side stuff for him hasn't been as consistent as you would like, but on the high end, it is still incredibly good. Right? So I think with more help, as you mentioned, Jordan Walsh, you get more Hugo. Just anyone that can take on tougher on-ball assignments, does that unlock Derek White to do more off-ball things? I think there are avenues in which you can provide more impact there. Offensively, it's very much been, I have more responsibility. I have more room to explore because of no Jason Tatum. A lot more pull-ups for Derek White. Those have not fallen to the degree that you would like for Derek White. And so when you talk about, like, it helps that Boston gets back in transition so they don't bleed fast break points, stuff like that. But on the possessions where they aren't deep in the clock, and it's some of the early stuff, a lot of that is Derek White. And it's like, you know, that bleeds into why don't they generate rim pressure? It's like, well, yeah, one of your guards is taking a 28-foot pull-up right now. Like, that's just kind of how that works. So, like, that combined with no Tatum means Jaylen Brown is your number one. And again, you're not sending two to Jaylen Brown to the same degree that you would send that to Tatum. Like, you don't get the same attacking tilted defenses opportunities, or at least in terms of volume for Derek White on that end. So, like, I think that's where you see the efficiency dip, and then thus you don't see the same offensive impact for him. Like, I don't think he's like worse as a player. Like, I think this context is different. The shots haven't fallen to the degree to offset the context changing. So, like, it's, yeah, we're not, I'm not making the fringe all-star case for Derek White this year. I guess it's the easier way to explain that, but he is still a good basketball player.
Understood. And the Celtics were 4-0 in November when Derek White scored 20 or more. So there's that.
There you go.
Might need him to do it a little bit, a few more times going forward. I'm intrigued. Like, this is a year of exploration for the Celtics. And again, a lot of opportunity for guys to contribute, and they know what they're supposed to do when they get in the game. And so we've had moments where Hugo Gonzalez's effort looks incredible. You got Jordan Walsh. His development has been fun for me, Nikias.
It has.
I like, especially when you see a young player and you see a coaching staff kind of challenge them and say, hey, what can you bring to the table every night? Mm-hmm. What is your process? Can we trust that pressure defensively? Can we trust you to defend multiple matchups? Can you make some timely shots? What are the drives like? And then you see a player respond and earn some more trust, earn some more time. That's always the fun. So I've enjoyed that. But yeah, the defense, I'm very intrigued because they have really worked to show bodies and protect the paint against very specific players of a certain talent level. The tricky part is, so like in their wins, opponents are shooting 33% from three. In their losses, they're shooting 40 percent from three. So while you are protecting the paint, you are also opening up looks at times. You're opening yourself up to counters, and it gives them a level of consistency on the defensive end, which is important, but it also gives an offense an out at times, which can ding you. So that's the back and forth of it all. And the Eastern Conference, they might define, I won't almost say they define, but the Eastern Conference, when you look at that, it's less about how many teams are playing well or above 500. It's more, I truly believe all these teams think they can beat each other. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of these teams are afraid of anybody on the Eastern Conference slate. And that's where it gets interesting, because eventually there's going to be some sort of separation. Where can Boston put themselves before that happens?
I think that's fair. I think I made the joke at the top of this segment, but to the defense point, and even the threes that they're giving up some of these losses, I think a lot of those are coming after offensive rebounds that they are giving up. Like, it is one thing to show a crowd. It's another thing to then, as shot goes up, find body, box out, actually clean the glass, but actually end the possession. And the Celtics just have not been good enough at that. They are dead last in the NBA in defensive rebound rate for clean the glass, Steve. That's not going to get it done, as basic as that is. They were 10th in offensive rebound. They're 10th in offensive rebound rate. I think you alluded to that a little bit earlier, and that's where you get into Nemias Keita and even some of the guards and wings flying in and getting extra possessions for them. But, like, I think that's going to be the lowest hanging fruit. Just, can they generate more possessions for themselves? Because I think they're still, even with the increased mid-range rate, like, they're 4th in three-point rate in the half court, and so they're still going to get a bunch of threes up. They're going to wall off the paint. You're going to wall off those easier looks and those more fruitful looks, which should, in theory, lead to fewer free throws and things like that. So, like, they still have a way to kind of math this thing in addition to the talent that they already have. They just got to give themselves more cracks at the apple. More bites at the apple. More cracks at it, whichever one you want to use. But, like, yeah, I think that's going to be your avenue.
You made apple pie for Thanksgiving? What's going on?
I sure didn't. Shout out sweet potato pie, though. the last thing I had on the Celtics offense, because we talked about Jaylen Brown, the shot making, right? The overall thing. So clean the glass, they track like location effective field goal percentage. So if a team shot league average from these spots on the floor, you know, based on how often you take those shots on the floor. The Boston Celtics, dead last in the NBA in location effective field goal percentage. They're 14th in actual effective field goal percentage, which once again points to this has kind of been a ridiculous shot making season for them mm-hmm. so far this year. And so, again, you would like to see them grab some low hanging fruit. But yeah, I think to answer your base question at the very beginning, like, I do think this is just a competitive basketball team, which is kind of what I think we both expected this year. I think we both exhibited some excitement about what the Celtics team could be. Like, neither one of us had them as like they're going to come out of the East. But it's like, I don't think they're just going to be 20 and 62 this year because Tatum is out. Like, they have good players. They have a very good coach. They have a system that puts them in games on both ends of the floor. And even to the defense, like, they've ramped up the pressure. I wonder, to that end, do they dial back some of the early pressure like we've seen a few teams do this year? And, like, does that kind of help aid their defense in getting bodies on bodies and cleaning or ending possessions more consistently there? Like, maybe that's an avenue to do that. But, yeah, I think they're a competitive group that on any given night can give you the blues. They have the three-point shooting. They have just the interior shot making. Jaylen Brown could just hit star shots for you. And then they got enough pesky dudes defensively to bother you. So there you go. Last two things I'd add. You mentioned the bodies that Boston's showing defensively. They're sixth in terms of how often they have a help defender present on drives. And Nemias Keita, hello, improved defense. I've already sung the praises of your screening for multiple years in a row at this point. But legit lob threat, very good offensive rebounder. The defense has gotten better. I don't know where he's going to land in the most improved conversation just because we have so many good candidates across the league. But, like, his name at least needs to be said. He's had a very good year for Boston. And so I just wanted to make sure I highlighted him before we got off of Boston. And so with that.
What team do you want to talk about?
Is it my team? It's time for us to spin the block on a team, Steve. So the last time
hold on. Very crucially, before we do, always spin the block. Continue?
No. Okay. The dunker spot does not condone.
I do. Continue?
that is a Steve Jones spin. Spin the block when appropriate. I will not co-sign always. I just will not do that. That will not be on me, nor the podcast at large. Anyway, the last time we talked about the Memphis Grizzlies, we had what I thought was a very fair and measured conversation about the Ja Morant of it all and what's going on with this Memphis start and the comfort of the players and rotation things and potential trade things, yada, 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 right? The Memphis Grizzlies very quietly are 5-2 in their last 7 games. That coincides with Ja Morant being out. So if you want to do the narrative thing, you can. But 5-2 in their last 7 games, 5-3 in their last 8. That's when Zach Edey came back. And this Grizzlies team, Steve, something that you pointed to early on, it's like, hey, the defense always sets the table for them. Early in the year, the defense was not setting the table. The Memphis Grizzlies are defending their tails off. Over the 7-game stretch, 9th in offense overall, 6th in defense, 8th in net rating. Vince Williams is defending his tail off. Jalen Wells is defending his tail off. And when you have two young wings that can take on tough assignments and navigate screens, and when one's navigating the other guys in help and they're just swiping down, they're all in all kinds of passing lanes or just boarding, driving lanes, it's really tough for you to generate good looks. And then you add in the Zach Edey / Jaren Jackson of it all on the interior and what they can do defensively. More so, you know, you think about Jaren Jackson as the former DPOY winner, et cetera. Stay on the floor, don't foul. But very good defender on balance. The Zach Edey portion of all of this, Steve, has been such a pleasant surprise.
Oh, man, I'm because surprised you said surprised. Well aware, you acknowledge this is not your prototype, eh?
Zach Edey is not the archetype of player that I generally, like, you know, wave the pom-poms for. See the effectiveness, but like, am I like, ah, who are you gonna see? Coming out of college, it's like, okay, cool. He is large. He should be able to score on the interior, generate offensive rebounds. We'll see what the screening is, because I didn't really love the screening in the college games that I saw from him, but like, okay, fine. There's your avenue. What is that dude gonna do in space defensively was my biggest question. Rookie year, you know, big man defense is difficult. Rookie big man defense is difficult. Rookie big man defense for a 7'4 guy is incredibly difficult. Didn't like a lot of what I saw from Edey last year. This season, am I making an all-defense campaign for him? No, I'm not doing that. But man, he looks more comfortable, Steve. He looks so much more comfortable defensively. The footwork feels better. Some of the hand play and drop. Let me stab at the dribble. Let me make sure I don't want to lose contain of my guy rolling behind me, but let me thwart this ball handler, give my guy time to navigate and reattach. He's doing the little things on that front. The Grizzlies have sprinkled in a handful of at-the-level coverages for him. Sprinkled in some late switches for him. And I'm just like, hey, this is more than I expected from year two Zach Edey, especially year two Zach Edey coming off of this long stretch. Like, he had surgery this offseason. So, like, I didn't expect this to be what it's looked like for him defensively. And you try to take a shot against him at the rim. Very funny on that front, because he's actually given up a higher percentage of shots at the rim this year than last year so far. But, like, you watch, and it's like, team players are making a lot of tough looks over him. They're just not having fun attacking him in general, though. He is swatting stuff. So, like, the defense is kind of where I start with Memphis. The navigation, the aggressive help that they're showing. Like, we talked about Ja Morant when we talked about Memphis last time. And the amount of bodies that he's seeing. The Grizzlies are just doing that to other teams. And so that's a funny bit for me. But Zach Edey's doing his job.
Well, I think when you look at a player going from college to the pros, you got to identify what's the skill set, what can they do. And so when you saw, okay, he can slide a little bit and they're willing to switch him at times, I'm intrigued. And so him coming back being healthy, one, if you notice, it helps their guards and their wings be more active, physical on screens, try and deny, funnel it to Zach Edey. If you ever see Zach Edey in the paint, he's off ball. I'm in the paint. I'm going to touch my guy, but I'm also going to tag anyone who it just comes in my lane. I'm going to give them a touch as well. The key for me has been his timing in the paint. So it's one thing to be able to protect the rim. It's another to be able to nail the timing on rotations, to hustle back and put yourself in a spot to contest and block shots. I feel like he's done that pretty consistently. And if he nails that on top of what Jaren Jackson Jr. can do defensively, I think it all blends it all together. And now Memphis has the defensive stops that they can get to now get out and run, and they can flow and give themselves more of a margin for error offensively. And so I think it all kind of works together. The offensive point has been very interesting, because it's funny to watch them kind of do flow things, or, hey, Jaren Jackson Jr., would you like a post up? And then there's a bunch of space and Zachy's like, well, I'm just going to hit someone real quick and get in the paint and yes. Seal. And it's like, oh yeah, that's right. He did do that a lot. Yeah, he can do that. So, but I think defensively, being in that drop, having the nuance, having the footwork, having the timing, so even if you get by me, I could contest, I can get right to the rim, you're not going to have a good time. Building that consistency has been important for this team that's been looking for something to kind of anchor down like we've seen the concepts. They're flowing a lot better offensively. Less thinking, more playing. I think you see that in the assist numbers, where they've had some high ones during this stretch where they're moving the ball, getting from side to side, flowing better. But the defense on top of that, what Edie brings on both ends, kind of gives them a really nice blend that now you can kind of see what the vision is.
Yeah, I think just quickly to sprinkle in the numbers, Steve, you know, we'll be, and this is a point that I've made before, but when we talk about Memphis over the past few seasons, if they're flirting around like a top 10 offense, it's mostly driven by high octane transition offense because we're forcing turnovers or we're just forcing misses and defense is good and we can just kind of flow and attack early, et cetera. The funny thing about this stretch, the Memphis Grizzlies, 26th in transition offense and transition frequency. They are 10th in half-court offense during this run, Steve. That is not what I had on my bingo card, and I say that as someone that, you know, watching these Grizzlies games, hello, point guard Vince Williams, not a lot of, like, Luka-level passes or anything like that, but, like, they are trusting him to initiate and run ball screens and make basic reads, and they keep it moving. Cam Spencer comes in, I'm just going to jitterbug around, fly off a pin down, and then attack immediately, or high pick and roll for me, that's fine. Santi Aldama, grab and go. We can flow an offense or in the middle of a possession, I'll flash to the top. We can flow it to a handoff or I can hit a cutter because Memphis is very active with their off-ball spacing and relocations. And so, like, they do just kind of let a little bit of everyone eat in this offense, which is kind of fun for me. And, like, so the fact that that has bred itself to, like, legit half-court offense is a big thing because it feels like the transition stuff is going to be low-hanging fruit. There are a lot of we actually get out and run and we're overpassing sometimes because we want to hit our guy, we want to get a flashy one in there. It's like, okay, well, maybe you could have just taken the layup. That's okay. And a lot of shots at the rim where you just want more finishes there. But again, like, that's low-hanging fruit for them. That should get better. Is this just going to be, like, a solid offense for the rest of the year? Because, like, that would excite me if so. Not as important as the defense getting back to where it is, which quickly on the help point, a 77% help rate on drives this year. That's fifth overall during this year, during this run of 5-2. That's up to 78%. And to bounce off of your point about Zach Edey getting the help from your Vince Williams, your Jalen Wells, and other wing guys, just the way they're crowding the paint. With Zach Edey on the floor, the help rate is 80%. They are showing bodies four out of every five drives. And so, like, that matches the eye test, of course, but, like, there's the numbers if you want that on top of that. But if this defense is stout, and now you have a situation to where no matter who's on the floor, we can initiate something. We can take two dribbles, and if we have a drive, then cool. If not, we move the ball and we keep going. And then if all else fails, Jaren, would you like to attack from the mid-post and go? Zach Edey, would you like to seal somebody? That's a foundation for something. Is that Western Conference contender? Like, probably not, especially with the start they had. But, like, that gives you something to build off of. And in the best of worlds, if we have this kind of flow, we have this kind of empowerment, everyone now understands what they're doing, where they're doing it, when they're doing it. When we eventually get Ja Morant back, it should be easier to have this foundation on top of the star stuff if Ja is back to doing the star stuff.
Well, I think going back to what we talked about last time we talked about Memphis, you have now had success on both ends of the floor. You now have more buy-in on both ends of the floor. And if you look at the Memphis wins during this stretch, look at how many people are in double figures. We're talking about six, seven guys a night. I didn't mean to do that, but you had to do it. They're able to kind of all flow together and know they have opportunities, know they have shots, balance shots out. It helps when Cam Spencer's making shots, by the way, which, by the way, he has not stopped doing that.
Boy, is he?
But now you have kind of that belief in what we're doing. You can navigate some of the moments that we saw would just stick with them early in the season. So it's credit to the coaching staff, it's credit to the players. I do have a question, though, real quick, guys.
What's up?
There are two players who have multiple 15 or more assist games. Do you know who they are?
Multiple 15 or more?
Yep.
Ew. Is Cade one?
No.
Okay. Well, I would assume Vince Williams is one.
Well, you ruined the bit immediately.
Well, no, I mean, he's averaging he's averaging over 9 during this stretch. Like, I had it in the notes. Like, hey, shout out Point Vince. Without Luka, I want to guess the other one now. Is it Luka?
No.
Oh, it's going to be Jokic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was thinking too hard about that one. Jeez Louise. Cade had that high assist there. He'd do it again. But yeah, it's big Jokic. Yeah, that's Jokic and Vince Williams. Exact players. you know, Zach player compares there. But yeah, I love that. I love that. Two things for me. Oh, did you have more Memphis things? I don't want to.
No, go ahead, man. Go ahead. Get it off before the shot clock goes off.
Okay. Well, I will once again press the possession button during the stretch for the Memphis Grizzlies. Third in offensive rebound rate. Hello, Zach Edey. First in defensive rebound rate. So it helps to get more bites at the apple. It helps to end possession so you can actually flow into offense on the other end. Novel concept as we were coming off the Boston discussion. The Grizzlies are certainly doing that. Now, as for Zach Edey, again, 5-3 since he's been back, 13.6 points per game, nearly 69% on twos, 11 boards, four of those on the offensive glass, a steal and two blocks per game. In 203 minutes with Zach Edey on the floor as of recording, the Memphis Grizzlies have a plus 21.3 net rating. Mm. With him off the floor overall this season, so even when he just was not available, a minus 9.3. That is an insane swing. That is over a 30-point swing. If you filter this for just the games that Zach Edey has played in, again, plus 21.3 with him on the court in 203 minutes, a minus 14.7 in 186 minutes with him off the floor in the games that he's played in so far this year. That's what, a 36-point swing for Zach Edey so far this year? It's kind of nuts, the impact he's had on both ends of the floor. Until that end, circling back to the defense, 0.85 points per possession on any trip featuring a pick and roll defended by Zach Edey. Again, a lot of navigation, a lot of help around that. But among players to defend at least 150, that is 11th of a 71-player group, and he is ahead of some name, buddy. Namely, slightly ahead of Victor Wembanyama in that number, Steve. Let's sprinkle that in.
Oh.
So that is the fun. Which, again, no one's going to argue that Zach Edey is actually a better defender than Victor Wembanyama. Duh. But the fact that he's even in range to be there, that it signifies, again, I am doing my job and the players around me are also doing my job. And if that's your baseline, you get the fun stuff on the other end. So shout out to the Memphis Grizzlies. I just wanted to salute them. Now, quickly on the negative end, before we go to break.
Oh, my.
I spared them last week, and it's somehow getting worse. I didn't think that I would be taking a bigger L than I was on the Brooklyn Nets, like, top 10 defense for 2 months thing. But good God, the Los Angeles Clippers, man. I should not be as emotionally invested in a basketball team that I do not genuinely root for as I am with this Clippers group. And it has been such a distressing experience. To set the table, 5-16 this year as of recording, 19th in offense, 28th in defense, 25th in net rating, 18th in half-court offense, 25th in half-court defense. They're 5th in transition offense. Unfortunately, they are dead last in frequency because they can't get stops and they don't run. And they are the worst transition defense in basketball. I am not a fan of what I am seeing from this group on the defensive end of the floor. I'm not a fan of what I'm seeing, period, with this group. It's kind of the larger thing. And again, I don't want to hang here for 10 minutes. We're going to get the break and we're going to have some fun stuff with some player shout outs. But like, good God, man. Do you know how hard it is to get this season from James Harden, at least offensively, this season from Kawhi Leonard since he's been back, and as of late, at the very least, this season from Ivica Zubac? If you zoom out, the box score is good. But as we both talked about, like, he hasn't had the same impact as the numbers would suggest. It is looking better as of late. But it's hard to have those three guys putting up good statistical seasons and it still looks like this. Last year, with these three on the floor, a plus 14.2 net rating, one of the best trios in basketball. So far this year, a minus 10.3. They have a 127 defensive rating with these three on the court. No! No, like, I was thinking about this as I was getting Clipper notes together yesterday and a little bit this morning, where I'm just like, man, is there a single person that I can't denigrate to some capacity with this in this team? Everybody's got something. Like, Kawhi just ain't been there. That's the low-hanging fruit there. Well, again, this hasn't been the same Zubats. I have said on this podcast that James Harden has played at an all-NBA / all-star level, and I genuinely believe that. And even within that context, he's a pretty big part of why this defense is what it is right now, particularly the transition stuff. He just does not get back consistently. It is hard to take as many above the break shots as he does and still not be the first person back. Like, that can't happen. And I say this as someone that has overall enjoyed the James Harden season because he has been insane for this Clippers group. He has carried a ridiculous burden offensively, the playmaking, the drives, the shot making. But like, that stuff bleeds into it. Chris Paul retiring. We don't know when Chris Paul is going to play. Now we got IG posts. Like I'm just kind of sad about this whole ordeal. They missed Derrick Jones Jr. or have missed him because just the lack of athleticism there, it just hurts. But even when he's on the floor, like teams can help off of him so they can restrict some of the half court offense things. And it just one thing unlocks another thing. They just have not been able to put together. And I was so high on this group. They won a bunch of games with Kawhi missing a bunch of games. I was like, well, hey. They are adding a lot of talent. It's older talent, so I see the concerns. One of the things that I brought up during our season preview is like, hey, what are the Clippers going to look like when they play up-tempo teams? Because I don't know how they're going to match up with those during random regular season nights. But even with them, it's like, okay, cool. They may have older players, but you can at least cycle more of those guys in. So if Bogdan Bogdanovic misses time, you got Bradley Beal. If Beal misses time, you got Chris Paul. If Chris Paul misses time, you know, you can cycle those guys in. They should have a high regular season baseline. And then when we get to the playoffs, we'll see what happens. We ain't about to get there. There's been more conversation about the Oklahoma City Thunder drafting Darren Peterson or Cam Boozer or AJ DeBonta than we have positive Clipper moments this year. That can't be the fit. This can't be the Chris Paul swan song. This can't be are we actually about to start talking about like James Harden trade destinations because the Clippers are just where they're at and they need to reset? Like, that's not where I thought we were going to be this year. I said 2 seed in Sharpie. And then immediately it's like, well, it's probably going to be Denver, but still, I'm excited about this Clippers team. And like, they ain't even in the play-in right now.
Yeah, that was October 15th. Nikias sent out, looks around, checks outside window, sits down at desk, writes Clippers 2 seed in Sharpie. Do you have like, did you get like something to remove that? Could be an issue.
Clearly, I was just sniffing the Sharpie. Like, that must have just been the bit. Like it's really, in all seriousness, this has really been a disappointing season. And again, I'm not even a Clipper fan. Very high on the group. Love a lot of the players there. Super cool fan base, by the way. But, like, no. Like, I just didn't think it was going to be this. Like, even if the defense slid because they were adding older players, okay, they go from top 10, they're, like, 12th or 13th in defensive rating. And they win 44 or 45 games to get through the play-in, and then we see. I didn't think it was all just going to fall off of a cliff, Steve. Ah. I ain't even mad. I'm disappointed.
Well, speaking of disappointed, you won't be disappointed if you stick with us after this break. We'll be back with more Dunker Spot, folks.
And we are back. I promise I'm in a better mood after that last segment. It is time to go to the elbow, Steve. Let's shout out some players. And I would like to start with one Kevin Durant. Just make this a quick history segment. One, on the year, Kevin Durant, 25.1 points per game as of recording, 53% on twos, 38% on threes. I would like to see him take more threes, but that's okay. 88 from the line, 5 boards, 3 assists, and a steal in his age 37 season. It's absurd. Just made his return after a brief absence with this Utah back-to-back, which very quick, weird scheduling quirk there. You just get back-to-back road games in Utah. That's okay. But 57 points across those 2 games for Kevin Durant on 63 true shooting. In the first game, he passed Alex English, and this is really what I wanted to get to, for 11th all-time on the all-time made field goals list. So as of recording, he's made 10,678 shots, right? Mm-hmm. He is 71 behind Hakeem Olajuwon for 10th all-time. He's 298 behind Elvin Hayes for 9th. At this current pace, he's averaged about 8.5 makes a game. That means in the next 8 or 9 games, he'll pass Hakeem. In the next 35 or so, which, 35. But in the next 35 or so, he'll pass Elvin Hayes. He's going to crack the top 10 in all time. And this is with him playing 27 games in 2014-15. He missed all of the 2019-20 season. He only played in 35 games in the 2021 season. He played in 47 games in the 22-23 season. And he's missed some time this year. And he is still well over 30,000 points. Quietly might move into 6 this year, depending on how the rest of the season goes for him. And again, moving up the list in terms of all-time made shots. So like, just salute to Kevin Durant across multiple decades being a ridiculous bucket getter. He just deserves his flowers. So I wanted to start with KD.
Speaking of shooters who deserve their flowers, Klay Thompson. Yeah. Last five games, averaging 16 points on 50% shooting from three on 8.4 attempts. They forgot who Klay Thompson is. Hey, good defense for 18 seconds. Oh, Klay Thompson's open. Oh, no. Oh, my. Yeah, you forgot. He's made three or more threes in nine of his last 11 games. Stop playing with Klay. And stop talking to him on the court, because he's going to say something back to you.
Can we pause there, actually? So, two things. People may have forgotten who Klay Thompson was, because Klay Thompson also forgot who Klay Thompson was at the beginning of the year. He just was not making shots. I'm glad that he is right now. Hey. Second, how many bench squabbles has he had over the last week and a half?
You're going to learn today.
Apparently. Everyone is going to respect the legacy and the name of Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
Also, just a general salute to Klay Thompson. But yeah, he's making shots. So there you go. My turn. Jalen Williams, the wing slash forward. Welcome back to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Two games played, two wins. And the thing that's intrigued me the most about Jalen Williams so far, and it's been like a fun reminder, as he largely has not made shots at a high degree yet. He's shooting 100% from three, Steve. He's taken one. But anyway, not converting shots inside the arc just yet. But his drives remain important, and the passing really remains important. I have really enjoyed his connections with Chet Holmgren since he's been back. Like, one possession that's loud for me is they went inverted pick and roll with Chet handling and Jalen screening, and the screening his own, and Chet gets a dunk. I'm like, this is the good stuff. This is going to be fun. But even beyond that, it's nice to get the reminder that while OKC has Shea and they have, you know, A.J. Mitchell and insert ball handler here that can initiate the offense, and they all are trusted to make plays, et cetera, like, Jalen Williams is probably just the best passer on the team still. And so it's just a different deal when he gets downhill and here's a lay down pass that probably shouldn't have got through to Chet Holmgren. Here's a late kick out pass at the corner that probably shouldn't have got through. Here's a late wraparound pass from Jalen Williams that also shouldn't have gotten through. Here's a basic play where we go high pick and roll, and it's just an on-time pocket pass where the ball perfectly bounces into the hand, so you don't have the low gather or anything like that, and the player can just go straight up with a shot. It's the precision of the basic stuff. It's the audacity of the louder stuff. And you're adding this into the OKC blender in which they just keep winning games and winning games and winning games and demoralizing opponents and winning more games. And they're just on track to win 70-plus games. So shout out to the Thunder, but welcome back, Jalen Williams. Glad to see you.
Also, the defense. You're reminded of how good he is defensively, and you should probably get a little bit more respect on that end. Speaking of defense.
D4 candidate last year. Yeah.
Speaking of defense, Anthony Black. You turn on the Orlando Magic. Anthony Black is disruptive. You want to talk about full court pressure. You want to talk about working to not get screened. You want to talk about ball pressure. You want to talk about activity. Anthony Black does that as well. On top of it, though, it's one thing to average 13 a night and shoot 48%. The last five games of Anthony Black, he's averaging 18, and he's shooting 47% from three. And let me tell you, this stretch where Desmond Bane has decided I'm going to be a demon, and Jalen Suggs decided, yeah, I'm also here, and Anthony Black has joined the party. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, salute to them. The Magic are moving and shaking a little bit.
Moving and shaking, moving up the Eastern Conference standing, Steve. The Orlando Magic, they also have some NBA Cup quarterfinals action coming next week. We got Heat Magic. We always get Heat Magic in some capacity before the calendar turns for a season, but yeah, man, they're just kind of doing the thing. So I'm glad you brought up Anthony Black. I almost did just want to do like a Magic thing. I was like, nah, I see Steve wants to talk about Anthony Black. We'll leave that there. But Orlando, we do see you. They have won many a games without Paolo Banchero so far. Franz has played well. You've already mentioned the guard, so I wanted to give the salute there. Good shout from you, Steve. Back to me. More so because I just forgot to do it in the earlier segment and I didn't want this podcast to end without shouting him out in some capacity. Going back to San Antonio very briefly, Harrison Barnes, quietly having a very good season for the San Antonio Spurs. 12 points per game. More importantly, 61% on twos, 42% on threes. He has been part of the switchability for San Antonio. Again, do you want Harrison Barnes defending type A players on the opposing side? No, especially not at this stage of his career. But holding up well enough, quietly doing a lot of communication things on the back line for San Antonio as well. But just a wildly vet just doing his job, knocking down shots, puncturing tilted defenses when necessary, which quickly on that front, Steve, 1.22 points per possession on trips featuring a Harrison Barnes drive in the big year of 2025. That is seventh among 137 players to log at least 75 so a year. Salute to the Black Falcon.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm going to give a salute to CJ McCollum, who scored 46 last week against Atlanta with 10 made threes and got buckets against the Bucks to get the Wizards a win. And I can't believe you just did that. Give me your next player.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'll double dip then, as you are recovering from me using Harrison Barnes' nickname.
No one calls him that.
I feel like if the nickname rises to the level of, like, it's on the basketball reference page. Also, again, this dates back to UNC. Like, this isn't, like, a random, like, we did the anomaly with Jason Tatum, where it was, like, a bit, but then it became a real thing. Like, this was just actually the thing. You know what I mean? But anyway, it's fine. We don't have to argue about it. Quick salute to Jalen Tyson. Summer League Demon has pretty consistently been in Cleveland's rotation. Quietly having a career year. Early in his career, but a career year nonetheless. 12 points per game, 54% on twos, 48% on threes on non-insignificant volume, 76 from the line. Five boards a game, nearly two offensive rebounds per game, nearly two combined stops per game. He's coming off the best game of his career, 27 points, 11 rebounds, five of those on the offensive glass, four assists and a steal for Jalen Tyson against the Indiana Pacers on Monday night. We got the call that game, so if you want to go back and lead pass, select that strategy stream, you can rock with us for that game if you'd like. He was a plus 23 in 31 minutes, Steve. And I think that game itself kind of highlighted what the Jalen Tyson experience has been on the high end defensively. I'll pick up a guy in the backcourt if necessary, but otherwise, I just want to bother you. I'll defend different types of guards and different types of wings. That's okay. Off the ball, I don't mind being the low man. Can be over-eager on some of the rotations that he makes. Still has to continue to clean that up, but in general, doesn't mind challenging shots at the rim. He'll fly it around. He'll make plays on the back end of possessions, and that's cool. Offensively, I'll fly in transition. Streak towards the corner, get a three. Streak down the wing, get an easy basket. Some nice contested finishes in that Pacers game as well, but like he can finish in the half court. Good screener. I appreciate his chemistry with Donovan Mitchell. He does a very good job of just a little push and slip. If teams are trying to switch, he can get out of there and open up some roles for him. Or I'm just going to hit you and stand here. I'm going to make sure that my star gets the matchup that he wants. And, like, that is a thankless job. But I see you, Jalen Tyson. Salute to you, brother. And on the other side, Jay Huff. He's knocking down threes again, Steve. He's swatting everything. It's seven straight games as of recording with at least two blocks. Opponents during the stretch, or at least heading into the Cleveland game. We have to see if it's updated to include the Cleveland game, but at least heading into the Cleveland game, opponents converting 41.7% of their shots at the rim against Jay Huff during that multi-block stretch. It's been kind of insane, and I once again salute him for sprinkling in reverse dunks as often as he does. So we need more of those in the NBA. Hashtag show me something on the fast break. So there we go.
Oh, you really double dipped. I had a salute to Spencer Jones. Career high night, was one of the few Nuggets who actually competed on the defensive end. I don't denigrate players for playing well, is what I would say, and I'll leave it there.
Okay.
And I have one free throw.
Okay.
And this is retaliation.
Okay.
For what you just did to me. Who do you believe in more, the Clippers or the Eagles?
Wow. Well, I tell you what, the Eagles offense looks like the Clippers defense. And for that, I am just going to cry after we finish recording.
Hit the horns.
Yeah, dude. It's the Eagles by default, but good God, bro. This needs to stop. I'm not even going to get angry. Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google. Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. We're here every Tuesday and Friday. Clips are included if you are more of a visual learner. Come rock with us, etc. And as I gave the disclaimer on the last episode, if you ever have random basketball questions, NBA, W, Unrival, whatever, dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Get to the mailbag. We'll get to the mailbag, or we may just get to your question at random. Who knows? You can follow me on socials at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we'll catch y'all later in the week.